My name is Joshua Gibson, and you are listening to the Philosophical Weightlifting Podcast, a show dedicated to promoting a message of critical thinking as it pertains to strength training, nutrition, and well-being. This is done through interviews with experts, high-level athletes, coaches, and people heavily involved in strength sports and athletic development. Pull up a chair, grab a coffee, and let's get on to today's podcast.
With my podcast, actually, I went from the very, very beginning, I think I had a full page of text, and there was a paragraph that was often ripped from the site of the person I was interviewing, had who they are, what they've done, where they've been, who they've coached, you know, who they've done PT on. And then I would often kind of use that to bridge into the episode, and I would read it word for word. Now it's kind of like, hey, here's person A. I've loved what they've been doing. How's your day been going? And that's like the extent of the intro now. Whereas before, yeah, it was like this long-winded, almost diatribe of their successes and their failures and their accolades. And, you know, now I think the podcast has grown so much and I've been able to filter out who I bring on that it acts as some sort of initiant and says, this person is quality. What they're going to say is something you should probably listen to.
Yeah, that's a good point. I generally pretty much always do, and it give me a background to yourself and tell the listeners who you are and a little bit about yourself kind of thing. I loathe podcasts that have 5 to 7 minutes of waffle beforehand, so I don't do that. But I would pretty much just go straight in, welcome, here's our guest today. Guest, tell us about yourself. And I mean, if you're dealing with someone like an Eric Helms, Mike Israetel, you know, the usuals, Lane Norton, they don't need an intro. Everyone knows Lane Norton has a PhD because he says it in every second sentence. But for lesser known people, I think it can be quite useful, and it can give the listener a bit of an appreciation of who they are and their knowledge base, and kind of frame the context of the discussion that is about to happen, particularly because with no lift, the stuff can be quite varied. I mean, this past year, I've had powerlifters on, I've had coaches on, I've had my friend Dr. Connor Heffernan on, who's a physical culture historian. But in that instance, I don't need to do an intro for him because he's been on so many times before. We've already had it, and the listeners are familiar with him. I also had, one of my favorite episodes this year was with a cognitive psychologist, Shane Littrell, who studies bullshitting, which is just, to be able to say that that's what you do is fantastic. And it's very applicable to the field that we're in as well.
No, I would agree. And I think to your point, when you bring people, you had recently had Judd Kalkoven on. So when you bring Judd on, like his work is his background, which is the theme of the podcast. So for me, I guess it's kind of weeding out the unnecessary parts of the show that are already going to be covered in depth as we discuss the work, right? So if he talks about, tissue tolerance and why tissues tend to kind of fail under, too much stress, it's like the interest developed, initially when he was playing sport or something like that. So we have to chronologically explore how this developed, why it developed, and where we're at. So I think any reasonably good podcast will do that. It's just, is it explicit? Who initiates it and how is it initiated? And for me, like the flow of the conversation seems to happen better when it's more story-like and less, hey, I'm going to tell you about yourself and then we'll get into you telling me about you. And that's a personal preference thing that's developed over time. But even if you were to pose that question to me, I would have I wouldn't know where to start. It would have to happen like, hey, the podcast, when did that start? Like the Philosophical Weightlifting Podcast, when did that start? How did it start? And I would backfill the detail because it gives the story richness. But if you said, tell me about your childhood, it's just so broad. It's so open-ended. And I don't know how I would parse out value from just information that exists. And that's another job of the podcast host, is to be able to provide the right information at the right time to tell a story, not just to extend the podcast or to fill air and fill time, which is something, again, this is all, it's all a skill and it's all thought about. It's just that with you and I, we've done it so much that we don't have to process it over time. We just process it immediately and can make it feel seamless and make it seem easy and make it seem enjoyable. But it's taken a lot of work and a lot of time. I don't know if you've kind of felt the same way about how you've developed your podcasting personality over the No Lift podcast era.
Yeah, I think so. And I'd like to think that it's all the time improving a little bit. It started from a very low base, so it kind of had to. But you know, I'd like to think I'm refining it a little bit over time. And the episodes from late 2021 are better than early 2021 and better than late 2020 and early 2020 and so on. But with that in mind, Josh, for the people who are listening who may not be familiar with you and who you are, could you give a little bit of a background to yourself and focusing in on your own lifting history, you know, how you got into lifting and training and then specifically weightlifting, your coaching, what do you do in that realm, and then the philosophical weightlifting podcast?
Yeah, and I think I've had to explain this a couple times recently, and I think of it almost as this like rebirth. So the phoenix kind of dies and then is reborn, and it creates like two distinct time periods, which again along a lifespan doesn't exist, but almost philosophically it feels like there's one, where, you know, I kind of came out of high school and went to uni initially, and just didn't really feel I had a direction. And that kind of led to focusing on the extracurriculars more than the actual teachings themselves. So I failed out of uni initially. And then I don't know why this happened. And for people listening, I'm sure you're spanning the globe. So maybe the familiarity with our music here in the US, you know, might be different based on the artist, but I was listening to a lot of Tupac and I was watching him in certain movie roles that he did. And he had on his website this book, like top 10 books list that he read while he was in prison. And I started going through those books and just became interested in kind of reading whatever Tupac read, because he seemed very well, I'd say like well cultured, well spoken. He knew how to formulate his thoughts and he knew what he wanted to talk about and how. And that led to Martin Luther King Jr., civil rights activist and philosophy major in his undergrad. And I thought when he talked about his philosophy education, I don't know what philosophy is. I mean, it's a word, it's something you can study, but I actually didn't have like a schema, but I didn't have like an operational definition for philosophy. It just kind of existed as a string of letters. So I started reading that stuff, consumed a lot of similar books. I think it was like The Alchemist, stuff like that. Autobiographies, trying to think of who specifically, like Malcolm X, other civil rights activists. And then that kind of put me on this path of getting more into philosophy as I've developed an understanding and an interest of it. And this is when I got into lifting and then re-enrolled into a community college. So I would go to the library, go to the philosophy section, started grabbing Marcus Aurelius's works, Seneca. I tried to read Ralph Waldo Emerson, Rene Descartes, like the actual like philosophers most people would know. And then I also tried to just read more about like Stoicism, Eastern philosophy, that stuff. Alan Watts was an initial influence, kind of like Tupac, who led that branch or kind of created that branching that would lead to Taoism and Buddhism and all of those other books. You know, that kind of sold similar ideas, but were from the source. Continued lifting, continued my education, Eventually started watching Cal Strength videos on YouTube, which are like the gold mine for USA weightlifting and kind of the birth of weightlifting in the US. Got into that, got into an undergraduate program, graduated with a degree in exercise science, just kept training and competing in weightlifting. And then eventually I felt like I wanted to get into coaching. Initially, it was more so a way to make income. And now it's kind of turned into this idea of like, how do we develop people who will be athletes who can perform? And that's definitely evolved over the years and it's spanned a good chunk of time. But I think at the heart of it, what it was driven most by was just a curiosity, a deep interest. And then now it's sharing that with other people. So I'm currently in a graduate program for, it's actually through ETSU, but it's applied sports science and coach education. I coach at a weightlifting club in Columbus, Ohio, and I podcast just so I can talk more about it and again, share those ideas with people. So a bit front-loaded in how I explained it. And I kind of purposefully avoided backloading it because I already felt like I talked so much, but that's almost the sequence that led me to right here and right now.
Yeah. And one word kind of jumps out at me from that. And that's, the curiosity factor, because I think that has to be the driving force with a lot of this. I mean, I think even if you're involved in any kind of scientific endeavor, it has to be driven primarily by the curiosity, because it's bloody hard otherwise, unless if that's not burning right through. And in a similar vein, I think with the podcast, I think that ought to be driven by curiosity, you know, and I know it certainly is for me, rather than like, let's just get someone on who's popular and they're going to get a load of listens. I think that's something I'm not particularly interested in. I'm curious to learn from individuals that I think have something that's worth sharing. And that's what I try to get at with the podcast for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's just someone I think that has an interesting story or that's doing very interesting research work, or again, I'm going to name drop once more, but Conor Heffernan. I mean, that man is just an encyclopedia of knowledge. And it's a pleasure to listen to him go off on one, if you know what I mean. It's fantastic. I'm very, very lucky to have found him and know him now, because the longer I've known him, the more I realize how much of a unique individual he is, because there's so few physical culture historians in the world. And not only that, but he's about the only one that would bother to respond to me. Anyone else ever reached out to? I never heard back from.
Yeah, I think the thing with people like that, and it's the people we come into contact with, you know, weekly or biweekly, however often you schedule the episodes. But like Alex Coliari-Turner, we both had him on our shows. He was on the Weightlifting House podcast. He was on the No Lift podcast. And he's a repository for information about performance-enhancing drugs, specifically in the U.S., in the timeline in general. How they developed, how they were used, how they were tested for, and then how the tests are beaten. And, you know, I think the fact that those people exist shows you that you can all consume the information and you could probably all consume it in the same quantity, but some people will just be able to use it and harness it and develop it even further and further and further. So I think as podcast hosts, our responsibility is to seek those people out. People who don't give themselves the limelight or the shine they probably deserve, but they're just so, I don't want to say like obsessed, but they're borderline obsessed with knowing information for the sake of knowing it and being able to contribute to the field. So your friend Connor, Alex, and I'm sure there are a host of other people who I could, you know, I think Mike Israetel to some extent just became obsessed with you know, physique development. And like, that's why he's such a popular guest too, is not only his ability to convey that information, but how he conveys it. And it's what always gives me hope and is why I again produce the podcast and try to to study as much as I do and coach as much as I do is because I feel like that's accessible for everyone and they lead by example, right? So Alex isn't an exception. He's an example. He's not, you know, the only person who can do that or be like that. He's a way that we can all be, or a way we can all study, learn, apply if we just work enough. So that's part of the reason I like getting the guests on too. It's just a hit of reality of this is what they know, this is how they know it. And hey, if you really want to get here, you can. Now, I'm sure you probably felt the same way. And you could probably go into your background. I think it'd be useful. But when you got your graduate degree or PhD, was it kind of that same idea of like initially it's this like high status, difficult thing to do, and then eventually you did it? So I don't know how you kind of felt before and then after, and then how that's kind of changed the way you think just generally about information and knowledge.
Yeah. And I would be lying if I said that there wasn't some element of ego involved in wanting to do the PhD. I mean, that would be just completely disingenuous. Like I wanted the title. I wanted to be Dr. Arthur Lynch. Now that said, when guys would be messing with me, you know, when I was a year or two into the program and calling me Dr. Arthur Lynch, I'd be like, hey, no, shut up. Not that I'd be superstitious or anything, but no, don't do that yet. And now, coincidentally, they don't call me it. But anyway. Yeah, and like, I mean, it's sort of the way it kind of snowballed as well, because, I mean, I was doing my undergraduate degree and getting on pretty well with it. And then you start to entertain thoughts of like, what am I going to do when I finish this? And, you know, you're kind of told when you're in, well, high school for you guys, secondary school over here, you know, at the end of this, you'll know what you want to do. And then I didn't. And then I went to college and it's like, all right, at the end of this, I'll know what I want to do. And then I didn't. And I was like, right, I'll try and stay in education. I might figure it out by then. Still don't really know what I want to do. But anyway, I did the degree. I did the PhD, and it was not a traditional PhD in the sense that my topic changed twice, and eventually when it settled and it was full steam ahead to get the studies completed, get the thesis written. The pandemic fell at a favorable time for me, and I know that's an awful thing to say, because the pandemic has not been favorable whatsoever. But the fact that it happened when it did versus if it had happened 12 months prior to that, I mean, I would have been screwed if it happened to me 12 months beforehand. It possibly would have been curtains for the PhD, because it was in a difficult spot at that point. But I had finished my data collection. I lost a little bit of data, but nothing catastrophic. And then it forced me to stay at home and write my thesis. Got it submitted, did the oral examination, and man, that was an anticlimactic experience, because that was done over Zoom, and then it's like you do the exam, and then at the very end it's like, all right, well, we're happy to announce that, you know, you've passed, and we can award you the title of PhD. And it's like, oh, fantastic, great, okay, thanks you guys, bye. And then you close down the call and you're like, there's no one else here in my apartment. So you're there ringing people to tell them, and it's like, ah, oh, all right, well, this is great, but I can't really do anything now. So yeah, a little bit anticlimactic. And the graduation ceremony was online as well. So that was, that was very much an anticlimactic experience. But to your original question, if I can remember it, yeah, my view of it definitely changed from before to during to afterwards.
I remember, Lane Norton, he actually made an interesting point, because I think a lot of people think, you know, once I do this monumental task or achieve this monumental thing, eventually my worldview will change, my life will change, things will be entirely different. And I think that's part of the reason so many people begin something like maybe a PhD program, their education, workout regimens, pretty much anything that has some long-lasting, long-term impact, and then puts you at like this distinguished place after the fact, is, well, my life will change. It will be altered by the achievement. And Lane Norton, there's a quote where he said that he felt, you know, for the first 2 or 3 weeks after his PhD, this elation. He felt like, you know, I finally did it. Things are great. And then he said it kind of just waned. And then he's like, well, I'm still Lane Norton. Now I'm just like Lane Norton PhD. Was it kind of the same experience where you had this like elation, this jubilation, and you even mentioned having it done over Skype or whatever platform, and then closing out the web browser, and it's like, well, that's it. How long did that feeling last before it turns into, well, I'm still Arthur and I still need to find work and I still need to like do all of these other things? Because I think people see that as the end itself, just like they do a national competition or a national medal or a PR lift. It's like, that's it. When I get there, my world will be changed or altered for the better. The reality of it is, it's just a different point in time, but it's the same person at a different point in time.
Yeah, you're dead right. I mean, at the end of the day, life goes on and the world keeps turning, whether you have PhD or not. But it is still something that gives me immense satisfaction when I think back to it. And I'm probably more satisfied that I was able to rescue it, because, well, I'm also annoyed at myself for letting it get to such a difficult position. But the fact that I was able to pull myself out of that hole and complete it is something that I have immense satisfaction or derive immense satisfaction from. And once you have it, you definitely do open more doors and people view you differently. Even within the university, right, I found that I'm viewed more as a colleague now and less of a student. Mm. Well, I'm not viewed as a student at all anymore. So people are inclined, not that they were condescending or anything, but they're less inclined to view you on a lower level. It's more like your colleagues now. So that's a nice experience. But other than that, it's same old, same old. I mean, it's a nice conversation starter, but apart from that, it doesn't really change a whole lot. And the other thing as well is, yeah, exactly, like a very high level competition would be a good analogy, because it's like, it's not like the thing stops once that's completed. Okay. There's the next competition, there's the next season, there's the next opponent. Mm. It just keeps going on. So, I mean, if it's in academia, you know, you've completed that study, it's like, great, fantastic, delighted with that, done now. Right, what's next? And you move on to the next thing. Or if it's coaching, you know, same idea. That competition was great, that went well for all of about 5 minutes, and then you're thinking, right, on to the next one. It never stops, because the world never stops.
Yeah. Even then, because I recently coached at a meet, and after the fact, we were definitely happy with the result, and I think, you know, showed good improvements. But for me, it immediately comes down right after the competition ends, is like, what do we do better next time? Like, how do we pull something from this to improve the preparation next time? And I'm sure it's a similar mindset for people who just want to continue to kind of push that envelope or push their abilities or push the achievement. So for you, once that happened, do you think, this is going to sound weird framing like this, but do you think the level of achievement is like on average higher now that needs to be accomplished or done for you to get that same satisfaction? Like once you get a PhD, right, that's from in the US, kindergarten, pre-K, all the way up until the PhD program. And that's a long span of time, right? That's a lot of work. It's a lot of hours, a lot of sweat, tears, all of the other emotions that can go into it. And then once you achieve it, it's like, okay, it weights off my shoulders. I can breathe. The next thing I do, like, how do you make it give you that same satisfaction? Or do you try to get the same satisfaction from it? So like a postdoctoral fellowship, I guess just bit like larger scale research studies. Like, how do you direct your life after a PhD to kind of fulfill that criteria of accomplishment and achievement?
Yeah, in truth, I don't know, because I'm still trying to figure it out, and I still, to the point I made earlier on, still trying to figure out what I'm trying to do in life. I mean, I did a postdoctoral role for a few months earlier on this year, and that was quite satisfying. And I think, see, the pandemic is having an effect on things too, because we went through quite a period of time where we couldn't do any human trials whatsoever. And the study I was involved in was about the only one that was running at the time. So we were just extremely grateful to be able to be in a lab conducting research, more so than we would be if we didn't have the pandemic surrounding us. So that definitely changed our outlook on it. We were much more appreciative of it as a result. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, some people do more than one PhD. Now, that is not something I would ever be interested in doing. But maybe they would be a better person to ask about this. I mean, like, if at how many PhDs are you going to be satisfied with, kind of thing? But no, for me, I mean, I'm pretty satisfied with it, because for a long time I was convinced that I had like very poor intelligence. I still question my intelligence at times, but I don't think I'm as dumb as I was made to believe as a youngster. I mean, I don't think I've shared this with too many people, but when I was in primary school, which is what we called over here, so say about 7 years old, 7, 8 years old, I had a teacher that used to chant "Duncy, Duncy, D, 60 years in ABC."
Wow!
Because I had difficulty concentrating. I would always have my head out the window. I would have trouble concentrating, and that was interpreted as I was dumb, because I wasn't following. You know, if we were reading a passage or something, I wouldn't know where we were because I wasn't looking at it. I had difficulty concentrating, but I'm not unintelligent. But I was convinced that I was below average intelligence for quite a long time, until, you know, the pieces started to come together around kind of late high school, like 16, 17, when I came to the realization of like, oh, if I actually work, I can get results. Prior to that, I just didn't work. I didn't get results, but I didn't work. So when I actually put the work in, I can get the results. And I just kept that up. Granted, I started to slip back into some bad habits during my PhD and let myself get distracted very easily at times. And powerlifting has a lot to blame for this as well, because when things were getting frustrating with the PhD, and this is a trap that is very easy to fall into because it's independent learning and you don't really have someone sitting on top of you in the same way that you do during a taught degree, because you have deadlines, you have exams, you have assignments that have to be due on certain dates and you have to be there present to do them. Sometimes if you miss a deadline for a PhD, nothing really happens. There isn't always the same level of accountability. And a lot of that can depend on your supervisor. But that allowed me a little bit too much leeway at times. And when I was having difficulty, I would just say, ah, screw it, leave my desk and then go and train. Sometimes with the intention to come back afterwards. And it just never happened. But I'd still tell myself that every time.
Do you think those were two things that developed mutually? Like, I know for me, again, my story kind of started with I got interested in lifting and physical, I don't like physical fitness, just being active. So like I started doing body weight circuits in my mom's basement, and then I'd go do sprints outside and I'd just do a ton of push-ups and random exercise. And then eventually it was a big deal when I got my first gym membership. Like, it was this like crowning achievement. And then I started going to the gym, And then once that happened, like I actually posted, and you might have seen it on Instagram, but I posted pictures of me like holding a bar with rags in my hand to keep the bar from slipping out of my grip. That was like one of the first days I ever trained with a barbell. And once I started that, the only thing that has kept me from lifting for an extended period of time is like medical emergency, like 6 weeks off because of a surgery. But other than that, I probably lifted 3 to 5 days a week for the last 8 years. And I know that it's helped me develop habits and skills to excel and succeed in other areas of my life. Is it kind of like a similar story for you? Because we talked about not being like viewed as being, you know, very bright. And then you kind of put the pieces together that if you work, you can succeed. Where did lifting kind of come into the picture? And then did they develop mutually? Or is it like for you a different story?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's huge parallels there, because I was slightly on the chubby side as a kid. And looking back, I wasn't even that overweight, but it definitely affected me. And I was very conscious of it. And my peers teased me, and it did frustrate me for a number of years. And then when I discovered lifting, and I discovered things like, you know, nutrition to support body composition and that kind of thing. And then it was very empowering for me, because I'm like, right, I have autonomy over this now. I can change the way I look through diet and exercise. And then you start to see the parallels then with the sport and exercise science, because that was like, okay, what university degree most closely aligns with this interest that I now have? And that was the sport and exercise sciences route. Bringing it back to the schooling, it was like I need to do pretty well in my exams to be able to get into that course. So then I start the hard work. I realize, oh, I can actually do well if I work hard. And then I see the parallels as well with the training. If I train hard and I eat a certain way, my body composition improves, and I'm no longer a fat kid. So that's basically how it kind of started, and it just kind of snowballed from there. A few years later, I did a bodybuilding show. I did another bodybuilding show a year later. Got fed up with that pretty quickly. Then just kind of went back to just lifting weights as a hobby that I enjoy doing. And then eventually ventured into powerlifting. And however many years later, I'm probably on the other side of that now as well. I don't see myself doing another one for quite a while. I might hold on until I'm a master. and at the moment, I'm back to where I was. I'm just a guy just lifting weights for the sake of it, because it's something I enjoy doing. But yeah, there was definitely parallels between the two of them.
Yeah, I always am surprised when people tell me that they've stopped training. And I guess this is more common when you talk to competitive athletes, and especially we mentioned, I think we talked about it off air, but interviewing high level competitors, like eventually they just stop training. I guess they don't feel like they want to put in the time. And if they can't put in the time to be the best, it's just not worth it on the whole. What ultimately, like, what keeps you just lifting, right? Why didn't you just drop it entirely, if you don't have the same kind of aspirations to compete or to kind of reach the next level of performance, given it's already kind of arbitrary and that it's like squat, bench, deadlift, but why still train?
It might disappoint you because you're hoping for some deep philosophical answer. It's just because I enjoy it. I enjoy it, and I have the same excitement and enthusiasm for going to the gym now as I did when I was 17, 18. It still excites me. I'm looking forward to it. I've got training later on this evening. Granted, there are days where I don't want to be in there. I don't enjoy it. You know, my knees are hurting. My back is giving me trouble. My shoulder is bothersome. These kind of things. Right now, the gym is freezing. So, like, there are unpleasant aspects to it. But on the whole, like, I just love doing it. And even if it's not, like, I mean, I haven't really made any progress in the last 3 years. A bar, like, odd lifts. Like, there was a a period where I was focusing pretty much exclusively on front squats and incline bench press for a while, and they went up quite substantially. But I mean, you could argue that some of that are neural adaptations that are not quite learning the movements, but it's not like, say, if you draw a parallel with like your competition back squat and bench press that you've been training for a number of years, and all of a sudden you find a way to add 10 kilos to them. It's not quite the same thing. But yeah, to your point, and we did discuss this before we started recording about, you know, in the early days of No Lift, we had a lot more lifters on the podcast, and now it's far more science communication episodes and physical culture history, which are areas that I really enjoy doing. But I mean, I look back on the catalogue of old episodes and I'll see different names there of really high achieving lifters. And not that long ago either, it's 3-4 years ago we're talking about. And I look at that and think, my God, you're not even training anymore. I don't know how I feel about this. That seems strange to me. It saddens me, I suppose, in a sense, because, well, for one, they were so good at it, and I'm sure that it gave them some enjoyment as well. And I think of all the enjoyment I've derived from say powerlifting, that I'm hugely appreciative of all the wonderful experiences I've had, all the people I've met, and all the relationships that I've developed and that have sustained, despite the fact that I'm not really heavily involved in the sport anymore. I mean, I'm still involved, but just not as to the extent that I was. And it saddens me to think that someone who I thought was probably in a similar position, that they have completely removed themselves to the point that they're not even engaging in the training anymore. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be powerlifting, but still lifting weights, because that was the common ground. That was where the Venn diagram overlapped, you know, where we had our connection. So when that's gone, then I don't know, maybe then you have more difficult time kind of sustaining that friendship or that relationship you had with that individual. Am I making sense at all?
Yeah, it does. It reminds me why I've been shifting the focus of my podcast to having on people who are more like our coaches, but invest more into the coach athlete relationship. And it kind of reminds me of athletes I've worked with who have stopped lifting altogether. And that was kind of the only sustaining thing, right? The lifting itself was what would bring us together multiple days a week, multiple hours a week, and keep a it's the beating pulse of the relationship. And once that's gone, it's not that the person changes, it's just that the circumstances change enough to keep it from being what it was and what it will ever be again. And you almost have to become you have to be okay with the idea that, and this was how it was explained to me from someone the other day, is like everyone exists on this timeline of your life and people will kind of come and go. And when they go, it's not like, why'd you leave? It's like, thanks for being a part of it. So I'm trying to reframe that stuff, because as a coach, it can feel personal. And I guess as like people who love powerlifting, watch powerlifting, compete in powerlifting, it feels personal. Yeah. Imagine if Taylor Atwood retired right now. It's like, hey, you're on top of the world. You're the best lifter that's pretty much ever lived in the USAPL, drug tested powerlifting. Like, you know, you're being selfish to leave. It's like, we want your performance.
Yeah.
Whereas like on Taylor's side, like maybe he just wants to retire on top. Maybe he just doesn't have that same drive or that same fire to keep him pushing as hard as he needs to improve. Maybe injuries have accumulated over time that just keep him from training hard enough to improve. So again, it's kind of like two sides to the story. People can only exist on this definite timeline. It's not an indefinite timeline. And when they go, it sucks. But it's something that like you just kind of have to be at peace with. And that's just, you know, part of the evolution or development of anything over time. And it kind of brings me to a question, which is why you started the No Lift podcast in the first place and why it's changed the way it has, going from more like athlete centric to more like people outside of the bubble that contribute indirectly but directly.
Yeah. And this will follow on very nicely from the last question, because the story, it's not a particularly impressive one, but long story short, so there was myself and Adam, who was the co-host I had at the time. Both of us at the time were giddy and excited about powerlifting within Ireland, specifically the Irish Powerlifting Federation, the IPF affiliate in within Ireland. And we were due to have our national championships, in this moment in time, the national championships were meant to take place, you know, a few weeks from then. So we had this idea of like, oh, we should do a preview podcast, go through all the weight classes, who we think is going to finish where and all that kind of thing. And so I obviously work with Sigma Nutrition, and that's where I do my coaching work. So I mentioned it to Danny, who's the head of Sigma Nutrition and who runs Sigma Nutrition Radio, and who was at the time doing a bit of a side project, the Sigma Powerlifting podcast. So I put the idea to him about, what if we record this podcast and we release it as an episode of the Sigma Powerlifting podcast? And he kind of said he didn't quite know how it would fit in with some of the other episodes. Plus, he was kind of going away from that anyway. That was mainly just to exploit his own network and you know, have the opportunity to have some interesting conversations with people involved in powerlifting. But it was only going to be a short-term thing. So he said, why don't you record it and just make it your own thing? So I was like, all right, cool, let's do that. So I put it to Adam. We would do this thing as our own podcast. And we're like, oh, what'll we call it? And then I said, you know, let's give it an ironic title. Let's call it the No Lift podcast, because obviously no lift is what you get when you fail a lift in a meet. And again, it was just two idiots just having fun. And you know, it wasn't ever meant to be anything particularly serious. But the first episode was very, very popular, as was the second one we did with Barry Pigott. I don't actually think we've managed to reach the same heights of those two episodes. We came in just before podcasts really exploded. Like, they were on the rise, but I mean, I think kind of 2017, 2018 is when I think podcasts really started to explode, and Spotify got involved and things like that. And it really accelerated. So, I mean, there's like, everyone has a podcast now, and it's very hard. It has diluted the market to such a stage that it's very hard to stand out. And I mean, even basic stuff, like if your audio is not crystal clear, no one's going to listen to you, because it's not that people have poor attention spans, but they've just so many other options now. I mean, they don't have to listen to one of the three powerlifting podcasts that exists, because there's now literally dozens of them. So they can turn you off if they can't hear what you're saying, or, you know, they don't like what you're saying pretty quickly. So we just kept that up over time. And then eventually Adam just kind of got too busy with work and stuff, so he couldn't really commit to doing episodes. And that was about 2 years after we'd started. And I just kept it up, again, driven by that curiosity to have interesting conversations and almost have I've kind of phrased it in this way, like it's almost like a free pass to get to have interesting conversations with people, because like otherwise you ask someone to jump on a Skype call or a Zoom call to just have a chat, and it's only for your benefit. it's met with a little bit of, people are a little bit circumspect about it. You know, it's viewed a little bit weirdly. But if you frame it of like, oh, let's have this interesting conversation and I will release it as an episode of my podcast, then all of a sudden it's like, ah, okay, cool. Yeah, that's fine. Let's talk about what I do for the benefit of the people who are listening. And you can reach a larger audience and tell people about what you do or whatever you have to share with them. So it's been great. It's been fun. I've expanded my network. I've managed to introduce myself to various interesting and wonderful individuals such as yourself, Josh, over the years. And yeah, I hope to keep it up as long as I can. And it's just been a blast. How has it been for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very similar. And I will say, as you were talking, I was thinking about what podcasting really is. And for me, it's like keeping your finger on the pulse of how other people are performing in the gym. It's like, okay, this person, you know, clean and jerks, you know, 140. I clean and jerk like 145. I need to kind of beef that up a little bit. So when I scroll through podcasts on Spotify, I'm very selective. So I listen to the No Lift podcast. I listen to Sigma Nutrition. Trying to even think, I listen to podcasts I know have a history of very, very well done, comprehensive interviews. Nothing that's like, I don't want to listen to Mike Teixeira talk about RPE. Like I get he might drop something right. That's like novel or new, but it's just like you said, it's been rehashed so many times. Like for me, I recorded an episode with Mike, and sadly the audio and the video were the quality was very poor. So I don't know if I'll ever release it, but it was about the stress index. And it's like he's never really gone on at length about what the stress index is and how it informs the prescription of training. So I look for shows that are new, interesting, and have a track record. And for me, it's about outlasting people. So when I go through podcasts on Spotify and I see that, you know, a show has like 3 episodes or 10 episodes or 30 or 50, and then it stopped, I get a little pride and satisfaction from having, like, at this point, I've had a few iterations of this podcast, but I think we're at episode like 136. And then also over time, the uniqueness of the show that's developed to where I have, you know, an episode talking about the traits of highly effective coaches coming out. If people are listening to this, you might have seen it or you might see it later. But it's something I've never heard spoken about in a powerlifting, weightlifting context. Youth resistance training, you had Helen Collins on, and I listened to that episode. It was fantastic. Like, she's done actual research on getting youth to resistance train and how that affects their perception of the self, strength as measured by peak force on like an isometric pull, like weight measurements and fundamental movement skills. So I got her on, and then I got Derek Miles to like give me some commentary and to beef up, you know, the side of things I wasn't too familiar with. So like very unique, special episodes that act as a repository for myself that I can access when I need inspiration or I'm kind of trying to understand a topic a little better. And then also something new for the community. So I think it acts in that way. And then every time I record it, I feel like I'm training at the gym. I feel like it's a performance to some extent, and I can be better or worse at my performance, and I can better or worse, you know, be better or worse at conveying information, communicating the right information. So all of this creates like this really cool process and outcome, where it's like the process of becoming better at podcasting, developing them, and then the outcome is like having this repository for other people and for myself. And I reached out to you, and I've mentioned a handful of times how good the No Lift podcast is. It's like, it's very unique. The information is like fantastic, right? Kyle Travis, it was the first time I had ever heard him talk on a podcast, and he's just like a wealth of information. So it's being able to have that for myself to where I can listen to that, but also everyone who reaches out and they say, you have the best weightlifting podcast around. Like, I get a little bit of satisfaction from that. And I want to maintain that status as best I can. So that's kind of like the what, the why, and the how. And that's changed over time. But ultimately, again, it's just been about understanding sport and exercise and training a bit more, and then being able to provide a novel take on that stuff.
Yeah. And thank you very much for that. I do appreciate the kind words. And to kind of piggyback off that, it's interesting because kind of similar to what you were saying about, like, if you see an episode with Mike Tashier talking about RPE again, it's fantastic. And you might pick up some small little anecdote or some interesting part of a conversation. But by and large, it's a story you've heard many times before. You're not going to glean anything revolutionary from it. Or, you know, how many different podcasts has Eric Helms been on? And granted, if Eric emailed me tomorrow and said, hey man, it's been a while since I was on No Lift, can I come back on? I'd be like, fucking absolutely. But the point stands, like, there's only so many times he can have the same conversation,
right?
You know, and you're like, all right, we kind of have heard this before. Not to knock him, but just he's so generous with his time. He's been on so many different podcasts, you know. Whereas if you can find the Conor Heffernans of the world, or the Kyle Travises of the world, you know, or Alex Colliery Turner, although I think more people are waking up to the fact that, like, if you want to learn about anabolic steroids, this is the guy to fucking go to. But just those almost hidden gems who are like so knowledgeable in their area, and they're really, really good at what they do, and they know their area inside out. And when they get talking about it, they're phenomenal. But just because, you know, they don't do the social media thing much, or just not a lot of people know about them because they're busy, like, actually doing stuff, not a lot of people will know about them. So they can benefit so much more from hearing from them. I think Danny kind of has a similar philosophy with Sigma Nutrition, in that, you know, there's all these various different academics and practitioners doing fantastic work around the world. And some of them are well known, but a lot of them aren't. And he's just giving them a platform to engage with his listeners and, you know, provide some very worthwhile content.
Yeah, I think it speaks to... and this isn't to, like, inflate our own egos, but it speaks to our ability to, one, think flexibly, and also just to always be thinking about different aspects of training, nutrition, etc. Because you can't have Kyle on without thinking about tapering and peaking for powerlifting, or thinking about the training process. You can't have Helen Collins on necessarily to talk youth resistance training if you haven't thought about it, right? Because you wouldn't be able to formulate questions that would ask, that would get the correct answer, that provide the right information for the people listening. You couldn't have, you know, Alex Colliery Turner on without thinking about how anabolic steroids fit into the sport world, specifically strength sports. So I think it speaks to someone's ability to think about a wide ranging collection of topics, to think about them deeply, and then to be able to articulate that. It's not easy, and it's definitely something I've had to develop over the years, to where I used to write every single question out. So I would have this entire sheet, not only with an intro, but it would be every single question I would ask, and it sounded like a very black and white interview. It's, how'd you get into sport? What are some things that stick out? What are things you wish you would have done differently? What advice would you give to our listeners? It was so robotic and black and white. And only with the help of my buddy Seb from Weightlifting House and his podcast, did he really challenge me to kind of, like, operate without crutches, so to speak, and to say, hey, all right, run the outro or run the intro. Or he would kind of poke fun at me for sounding robotic and sounding so formulaic. And now, you know, it can hold a conversation, can make it interesting, can manage a bunch of different topics in your mind and then circle through them as necessary. So it's a skill that develops. So I think when people listen to these podcasts, it's like, hey, the best guests, the best shows It's like it's an ode to your ability, Arthur, to manage this stuff and to manage it dynamically. So I think, the process you've had in place, you've developed over time, and it speaks to your ability to develop and evolve. And I think I don't know if people appreciate that, but they definitely should when they listen to, say, the No Lift podcast.
Yeah, and I just sort of view it like again, not to be inflating the ego, but the way I go about it, or my take on it is like, if I get someone who is a subject expert in whatever field it may be, or they've done research in a particular area, what a pity it would be if you didn't do a bit of
Right.
prep work, because your questions are not going to be good. If it's a researcher, like, read their papers, make some notes, and yeah, it doesn't have to be as scripted and formulaic as you say, but just make some notes of things that would be
Right.
interesting to chat about. Or if you read through their methods section, because you have a bit of an appreciation for it, you might think that's quite a difficult methodology they're using.
Right.
Let's try and explore that a little bit more, because they'll have done it, so they'll know about it and they'll be able to talk about it. So to give the listeners an appreciation for what that's like as well, and things like that. So you have to, yeah, you got to do your prep work, and then ask questions that that you're genuinely is interested about, but also be the person in the classroom that asks the stupid question, if you know what I mean. Ask the question that everyone else wants to ask, but that they're a little bit embarrassed to ask about. Giving away my secrets here,
No, and
but
I think that speaks to how comprehensive, you and I could be. So I did a podcast with Eric Helms, and a lot of it was spurred on by a lecture I was going through on body composition. So the show was on all things body composition, and it starts out with, well, what's like what is body composition in the first place? Like, what constitutes someone's body composition? And then you talk about fat and lean mass, and then you kind of break those down, and you talk about different models, and you start from this very, very skeleton framework, and then you build and build and build and build. And I think that's, again, that's like the skill you develop. So when I talk about not having notes or questions, it's just because every hour of the day I'm listening to or trying to consume information, and it's generally someone's work, right? So I'm currently obsessed with this podcast called On Coaching by John Steve Magnus and John Marcus. They're two cross-country coaches, endurance coaches, and it's one of the, I mean, if I had a top five, it'd be top five hands down. And the fact I've listened to almost every episode multiple times, I could record a podcast tomorrow and develop good questions. I don't need to revisit concepts and ideas. I don't need to write it down. But it's because I've become so obsessive with that. So when, again, when I talk about this stuff, it's built on this foundation. It's not built on it's not built on the skeleton or the framework. It's built on this well-established, deeply rooted interest that's developed and has been supplemented with. It's the same with Brad Schoenfeld, right? If you get Brad Schoenfeld on to talk about muscle hypertrophy, I'm sure we could have a very special conversation just because from 2010 when he submitted his master's thesis, and since I've been consuming a lot of Brad's work. I read his book, I've read papers, I keep up with his social media stuff, and I've listened to almost every podcast he's done. So that alone will supply me with the questions I need. So again, it's as though it seems black and white, but it's not. And I think you make a good point that just because we talk like this doesn't mean in practice it pans out the same way. It just, as you become more experienced, you develop your own way of doing things, and our ways diverge a little bit, but I think they're built on the same kind of concepts and ideas.
And you do generalize things when you're talking about it on this kind of platform. I mean, if you were in the thick of it, what you do might not necessarily align perfectly with what you said on X podcast, and you shouldn't be held to that, because everything is dependent on the context around it, you know, and the situation. Because the other, like the other side of it is that you're dogmatic and you don't change your practice based on the circumstances that you find yourself in, which I don't think is good practice whatsoever. But something you touched on there that I want to explore a little more, and this is just for fun. This is just for pure amusement. So you mentioned you mentioned a top five. We've already got one on it.
Yeah.
What would be the other four?
So just going through my most recent listens and the podcasts I consume almost every episode of, I would definitely say the No Lift podcast. I mean, it's fantastic. And I think I probably haven't listened to every episode. I probably can't say that I will, just because like those athlete interviews aren't terribly pressing in my mind. The interviews you do and the podcasts you've done are so well done, and the topics are so interesting and keep me thinking that, you know, it's kind of the idea that it's like an apple tree. It's like continually producing fruit. So that Kyle Travis podcast, I can go re-listen to that and probably develop more ideas, and I could revisit it and develop more ideas. It's not like this, just like very immediate gratification from it, where it's like, okay, that was a good podcast, I'm done with it. But I find your episodes to be continually thoughtful and thought provoking on coaching. That's definitely one of the best I've ever listened to. It's outdated now, and I don't think Robbie puts as much work into it, but all things strength and wellness by Robbie Burke. That's like the oldest podcast probably ever.
Sorry to derail you now, but I have a very funny anecdote about all things strength and wellness. So that was one of the first ones I came across, along with, I don't know if you ever listened to Iron Radio.
I don't think so.
That was the OG. Like that started in 2009. That was before, like, you'd be like, podcast? What the hell is that? all things strength and wellness was another one I really enjoyed. And I remember I met Robbie at a seminar like a few months after I'd started listening to it, and I went up to him, and standing beside him was Danny Lennon, who at the time I had no idea who he was at the time. And so I went up to him like during the lunch break, kind of introduced myself, you know, how are you, Robbie? I'm Arthur, I love the podcast, thanks for putting it out. It's really great. And Robbie was a little bit stunned, because he's like, oh, thanks. Yeah, but I mean, to be honest, you should really listen to this guy's podcast, you know? But apologies, continue. So we've got all things strength and wellness.
Yeah, so all things strength and wellness, No Lift, on coaching. And the thing about Robbie is he's made to podcast. So I've had him on my show a handful of times. One episode that sticks out is with Kevin Kahn and Keith Davids. And Keith Davids, I don't think you've ever had him on your podcast, but he's a skill acquisition researcher, motor learning. I think I don't know where motor learning is or where it's skill acquisition. I think it's just different parts of the globe say it differently. But he studies skill acquisition, and he's like the OG dynamic systems theory, how your environment influence your movement choices and all that stuff. So that episode, you know, Robbie just very well spoken, very curious, depth of understanding. So all things strength and wellness would probably be up there. I would say just for how much I've gone to it over the years, Sigma Nutrition Radio. Again, every episode, because it's so specific to nutrition, can be a bit out of my scope. So like if they talk about cholesterol or even chrononutrition to some extent, stuff like that probably evades my interest, but that has a lot of really solid episodes and really interesting guests. And then the fifth, I honestly, with how much I've listened to it, the quality of the guests would be my own podcast. Like I use it as a repository to revisit and to, every episode I've done, I've almost re-listened to some 2, 3, 4 times in a row. And I think it's got some of the best guests, some of the best content, and nothing else comes to mind. So I'd have to plug that one in.
again, it's a bad sign if you don't think your own podcast is pretty good. Because right. Then it's like, why are you spending all this time doing it then? So, exactly. Yeah, I don't think there should be a moment's hesitation about saying that your podcast is pretty good.
Yeah. I would pose you that same question because, one, I don't know. Like, I listen to podcasts almost every waking moment of the day. I don't know how your interest is with that stuff, but if you were to give the listeners a top five list, what would it be?
Yeah, this is tough. And I might have to upset a few people here, which is the most difficult thing. Now, granted as well, I haven't listened to all the episodes of the Philosophical Weightlifting Podcast.
Sure.
I've listened to about five now and I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed the episodes with Hugh. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
Hugh Gilmore. And
he's a great guy.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And on that note, one of my top five would be his podcast, the 80% Mental podcast.
Yeah.
I think if you're interested in sports psychology, like if you're involved in sport, it's very, very good because the topics that are covered are related back to sport through lots of stories and anecdotes as well to make it relatable to people while also being in a good solid foundation of evidence of science-based practice and recommendations. So I'd say 80% Mental. Barbell Medicine is very good.
Oh yeah.
I think.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Sigma Nutrition, the Synapse Performance Podcast. I quite enjoy that one. Again, biased because Dave's a good friend of mine. Clinical Athlete is one I think that should be more popular or like I think is really good and it's not as popular as some of the others, but I think it ought to be. Stronger by Science is probably my number one. I just find that strikes the balance between excellent knowledge, it's very well researched and well laid out, well presented, and the two lads are good fun.
Yeah.
And then the last one I'd say, I know this is way more than a top five, but I think these are all interesting for people to check out and they may or may not do so, but Beauty and the Geek.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Wayne Norton's podcast.
If you can temper his own ads, like you have to skip through a bit of it. But other than that, it's very well worth a listen. Lane is actually a very good interviewer,
even though
like I can, if Lane's not your cup of tea, I get it. I can understand why that might be the case, but I think it almost depends on what platform. Like it's like he has a different personality on the different social media platforms. Like don't follow him on Twitter. It's not nice. But if you follow him on like his YouTube channel or podcasts, he's way more reasonable, I find. But he's going to war on Twitter. It's sometimes it's enjoyable, but sometimes it can be actually just like can just wear you down just watching it. I don't know.
Well, and thinking about the list you gave, it reminds me that I've so many podcasts I listened to I couldn't think about in the moment.
See, I was a little unfair to you. I made you go first, and as you were talking, I was thinking of not only what you were saying, but also I was thinking of others. And,
sure.
But yeah, but they would be some that I would recommend anyway.
Well, I think the Clinical Athlete podcast, if people go back and listen to that, and I love Quinn. I actually reached out to him. I have a lifter. She's in Southern California. I told him to go to SoCal Weightlifting and meet up with her because I want to meet him through her. So I've never actually met him in person yet. So I told her to go meet Quinn. So to be fair to him in the podcast, I thought it was a little better before they started becoming more specific to like physical therapy students and kind of branching out. So if I were to go back and listen to the episodes they've recorded, it'd probably be the first like 20 or 30. Less so now. I probably don't tune in as much. Barbell Medicine has been good through and through. Reactive Training Systems, Mike Desheer's podcast. Yeah, it's a solid listen. And again, as with any good podcast, I don't think it's very rare you find one you can listen to from start to finish. It's almost any like really dense book. Like you can read it. You might waste a little bit of time through some of the sections. So it's probably best if you kind of like spot read or spot listen. So I think Mike Desheer's podcast, Clinical Athlete, Barbell Medicine, Leighton Orton's podcast, yeah, it's actually very good. And some guests on that that you wouldn't listen to otherwise. So Donald Lehman, kind of other similar researchers. And then just to kind of flip that question, top five guests. So who would you seek out on other podcasts, or who would you like want to have on?
Well, I think number one, because he is so elusive, is Lane. I think if I could get Lane on, that would be great. I know Ryan Lapidat said he'd put in a good word for me if I ever asked. But I haven't as of yet. I can imagine it'll be like, oh, how many listens does your podcast normally get? I'm very busy, man. I appreciate the invite, but I don't have time for it. So I don't see that happening anytime soon. Like, apart from that, there's very few people that have like said flat out no. More often than not, I don't get a response, and that may be because it goes into spam, or they're just like, I'm going to pretend this has gone into spam and just not reply. Jan Todd would be one I would love to get on.
Okay.
But just, and like, talking to Connor, who used to have an office like beside her, even then it was difficult to track her down, he said. Like, and he was literally next door to her. So, yeah just getting her. Because she's just got so much going on. So, Petty Youngfla in Ireland who wants to do a podcast, it's probably not the best use of her time, so I get it.
Right.
But other than that, more or less anyone I've tried to get, I've been able to. That I really wanted to. There was some that I tried and I was like, I don't really care. You know, not to do them a disservice or anything, but that would be just, I'm not going to chase them. You know what I'm saying?
So I've like one question off the back of that, but if you were to, so, you know, kind of the same idea as like we provided our favorite podcast, people know what they can listen to. If you were going to listen to a podcast, do you do like use the search function and type in certain names, or type in like, how do you listen to podcasts?
Yeah. Back when they were less plentiful, that's usually what I would do is I would, you know, I might have come across someone and I find them interesting or enjoyable to listen to, so I might just type into YouTube or Google Eric Helms, Mike Israetel, that kind of thing. I tend not to do that much anymore. The YouTube and Spotify algorithms are pretty good at what they do.
Yeah.
So they seem to find me. They seem to find things that I would enjoy. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but even just in the few minutes I gave you that list of recommended podcasts, I mean, like, if you listen to all of those, that would be a substantial amount of time. I mean, I don't know how much time you have to listen to podcasts. By the time you got through all of those, there'd probably be a new episode of one of them. Again, right. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I don't need to go looking for them more often than not, which I suppose is difficult too from the point of view of like finding the next Kyle Travis or the next Alex Colliery Turner or the next Connor Heffernan, if you know what I mean.
Well, I do exactly, because I, before, and you're probably familiar with Data Driven Strength, Zach Robinson and Josh Pellin, I actually knew Zach. He lifted the same gym, so I was talking to him when he was in his undergrad, and we both kind of like bonded over clinical athlete and barbell medicine and stuff. And then I had him on my podcast, and I think I only have one episode with him still up. It was before I canceled my account and then lost all of my episodes and had to restart. But it was Zach Robinson and Kevin Kahn. And I had a couple episodes with Zach. We talked about athlete monitoring. And I think there might have been one more. Those two are lost, but I have the episode 80 or 81. And then now Zach is wildly more popular than my podcast and like my social media. So I think Zach Robinson is kind of like, I did a little bit of work with him before he blew up and became what most would consider now as like a staple kind of in the powerlifting world. But if people are listening and they want good content, anything with Zach is high quality. So I'd implore them to check that out.
Cool, man. Anything else you wanted to chat about?
Yeah, the last question actually that I and this is just something, you know, as a podcaster, you come into like certain situations and you think they're unique to you and you realize they're not. And I think listeners will probably be interested to hear our answers, but have you recorded any episodes that you haven't released because you didn't think they either like fit the brand or the quality wasn't good enough or anything would keep them from making it onto the show?
I certainly lost episodes that I thought recorded and didn't. That happened once or twice. And there might have been one or two where I might have had a bit of hesitation and saying, oh, this could maybe land me in trouble, but I just, oh, fuck it.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens. Although, particularly the last couple of years, there haven't really been any like controversial episodes. Mm-hmm. It's mostly just people presenting their own research. And there's probably not enough people listening for the probability of someone who is a troublemaker leaves a comment underneath. There hasn't really been that. I haven't really had that problem at all. Yeah, there might be a few where I think, I don't know if I... And this is not like blaming the guest or anything, but I might think I could have asked more questions when they were talking about such and such to facilitate them elaborating on an interesting point and I moved away from it too quickly or things like that, and I might think, like, you know, my questioning could have been better, but other than that, not really. What about yourself?
And I was just thinking about, because we don't really have a way to filter people besides listening to podcasts that they've done with other podcasters, you don't know what you're getting. So if you bring someone on who hasn't really been interviewed, it's kind of like you're rolling the dice to see what you're going to get. So I've had episodes where I haven't released them because for me, I don't think the content lived up to what I want the podcast to be. An example that sticks out, and I'll say the name because I don't think he would care, but I did one of my really early shows with Bryce Lewis. And I remember kind of feeling attacked during that episode for something I said, and he kind of like questioned why I would say it like that or how I framed it. And I thought that was like a very awkward thing to happen. And I was like, I'm definitely not going to put this up. And I think he reached out via email afterwards and apologized for how it came off. But, you know, I'm like, part of that was just me not knowing how to communicate my ideas and thoughts and beliefs, and then not knowing how to organize that conversation. So I think a lot of it was probably my fault. I probably spoke a bit too black and white, probably made assumptions I shouldn't have made. The exact topic, I don't really remember now. Does it really matter? No, but it does stick out like vividly as a podcast I never ended up releasing because of like the way it kind of flowed. I've had that happen a handful of times. I thought about releasing those episodes on a Patreon, just saying, hey, if you want, you want to pay like $4, you can listen to these episodes that I probably won't put up on the main show. Because again, you end up getting like this backlog of shows and you have to be somewhat selective. Done it a couple times, but generally that's because I didn't do my part in facilitating the conversation, filtering the guests. And I probably just wasn't ready for the interview itself, if that makes sense.
And tell me, have you had many issues with challenging audio on the part of the guest that you just had to kind of put up with, or bad internet connection, or those kind of problems?
Yeah, pretty much runs the gamut. I had one episode that was never released because the audio was like you're listening to someone through a tin can about like 100 yards away. And I've had, I've had so many issues. It's almost hard to remember all of them. And it's funny, the more podcasts you record, you think the frequency of those issues would be less and less, but like you can't control the technology. So we'll randomly have an issue with the podcasting platform we use where it won't allow someone to record or they can't open the link. And it's like, I've used this hundreds of times. I've never had this issue, and then it just crops up out of nowhere and it's unavoidable. like as a podcast host, the one of the skills you have to have is like adaptability. You have to be adaptable and flexible. So you have to be able to adapt to what you have and flexible to change times, dates, platforms. And you have to, so you just kind of have to be resourceful in that sense. But there's almost too many problems. I can't even remember all of them distinctly. It's more so rare when you get like a perfectly executed show. And those are the shows where at the end you just have like this feeling of satisfaction. It's like the conversation was great. The audio was great. Everything went smoothly. And then that's kind of like why you do it. Have you kind of felt the same way?
Yeah, it's like a good metaphor for training, really.
Oh, it's perfect. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, similar issues. And again, I take your point about the adaptability kind of thing. You know, if one platform doesn't work, you use another, or you go and you click record and it's like, oh shit, the audio recorder is not working. And you find out it's like, oh, the memory card is full. Okay, yeah. Then we'll just record through Zoom or open up Zencaster there or whatever way around. Or the cable for the microphone is making a funny sound, so we need to use the backup microphone. All these kind of things are just part and parcel of it. And it's kind of like checking the lights on your car before you go off and drive. I mean, they could be working just fine, and then you get into the car and you think, oh, right. I was really diligent. I checked my lights and that, and made sure that they're all the bulbs are working before I set off. And then lo and behold, just randomly one of them just stops working once you start driving. It's kind of like that. I mean, you have no way of knowing, even if you do check them beforehand. Sometimes you know when bits of equipment are on the way out, like because they're slowly getting worse over time, and you can just about manage it. Hold a cable in a particular direction, and it doesn't make that funny sound when you do it that way. But by and large, you don't get much warning when something's on the way out.
Well, it's funny you say that. Now you kind of brought that memory back up, but I replaced the cord to my Yeti mic recently. I mean, it's not recently now, but I remember I would have to have it plugged in this very exact specific way to get the mic to work. And it was such a hassle. And I should have replaced it immediately, but I kind of delayed it and tried to fiddle with it and mess around. But so I think a good way to wrap up the show, or at least to like come to a close, is people have listened to this and gotten to know yourself, the host of the No Lift podcast, and you know everything else that you do. Granted, it's not the entire it's the gestalt, it's the generalization of Arthur Lynch, and then myself, the Philosophical Weightlifting podcast. And they're probably thinking, okay, I either want to start a podcast, love listening to podcasts, or I could potentially be a podcast host at some point in the future, or they have one themselves. Any advice, to someone who kind of is at some time point in their journey as well for starting, doing or improving their podcast?
Yeah. Or maybe just some things to consider. One would be, how many podcasts are out there that did like 6 episodes and just died?
Yeah.
And not that that's bad. Like, they may have been 6 excellent episodes. I mean, there's many podcasts that ended very quickly, and I was very disappointed about it because, like, this was fantastic. Why did this have to stop? Sometimes just because the host got too busy or any various number of reasons why it stopped. So just consider that. A lot of podcasts do crash and burn pretty quickly. And maybe that's because they get into it and then they realize after the honeymoon period and the initial excitement is over, they realize, ah, crap, this actually takes time to like schedule episodes. Even if you don't have guests on, even if it's just a few friends just chatting and talking shop, you still need to schedule them. You need to make time to do them. You probably need to leave some time afterwards to at least edit the podcast a little bit. Maybe run a noise filter over it or something like that. You need to allow time for that as well, and then put it up on wherever you're hosting it. And maybe just consider if this is something that you see yourself doing beyond a handful of episodes. And if you think, nah, I'm just going to do 4 or 5, and if that's it, that's it. That's fine. But I would view that kind of strangely if I just did a few episodes and then just packed it in immediately. I you know, for me, it's like it needs to be something that's coming out regularly. And the other side of it, I guess, don't bite off more than you can chew. Like, we started off with every second week for quite a while because we're like, we're not going to manage every week. Now, over time, I've got to the stage where I'm more or less every week, or pretty, you know, the odd month I might miss a week here and there, but I don't fret about it too much. But it's reasonably regular, and so that might be just something to consider. Is like that a lot of podcasts die off pretty quickly. So I mean, do you want to be another one of those? Another is that, again, that the podcast market has really exploded, so it's very hard to stand out from the crowd. So again, consider that. And then the last thing would be, if it's something you're serious about and you've considered the previous points I made, invest in good equipment. Buy fairly nice so that you don't have to buy twice. Don't buy the most expensive thing you can find, but also don't buy the cheapest thing you can find, because you'll find you have to replace it after a while because it's just not up to it. So there's a bit of a false economy there. I'd say just get a decent recording set up, a decent microphone, you know, have a decent laptop to record it on, and then just have at it. Yeah. And again, I think the curiosity should be the thing that's driving it rather than any other kind of motive. I think needs to come from a place of curiosity, because more likely than not, it's certainly going to cost you time and money. But if you're cool with that for the benefit of like having the opportunity to have those conversations, then it's probably worth it. Then what about yourself?
Yeah, I would reiterate all that, and I'll probably just go deeper into a couple of those points. The first would be developing a process over time. And the biggest thing for me is I never try to develop it all at once. So I never said with the first episode, I need to have a perfect thumbnail. I need to have like a perfect outline for the description. I need to have perfect equipment. I need to have the perfect guest. There was nothing about my podcast that was polished at first. And you could argue there's still a lot of unpolished parts to my podcast. But with everything I do, the higher the standard initially, the harder it is to replicate or duplicate that standard over time. So if you say, I want to have the greatest podcast ever, and you invest a lot of resources, be it money, time, and energy into it, how do you do that again and again and again, assuming you're going to record 10, 20, 50, 100, 200 episodes? So what I've kind of appreciated from you is that for your thumbnails, you'll just post pictures, pictures of the people, pictures of the article, just random shots. And I think on your end, it helps free up some time. It helps you invest a little more maybe in procuring the guest, interviewing the person. Whereas like I look on the podcasting market and the thumbnails are so elaborate and so well done, and I just can't compete with that, mostly because I don't want to or care to. But what I have now, the podcast thumbnail I've developed, is just kind of slowly grown over time from something that looked atrocious, literally the worst thing you can ever imagine. It's like a picture of the person, and there was like text scattered on the screen, and it was like kind of faded underneath so you could distinguish it from the picture. It was awful. But that's something I did and changed over time. The equipment is something I got and developed over time. The podcast, like structure, format, description, developed it over time. The logos I've developed over time. So my point is that if you invest in the process, it'll become what you want it to become. But if you invest in the outcome or the aesthetic, it's just going to be so hard to maintain it and to put everything into it initially. And that goes with editing the podcast too. Is like I probably jerry-rig or set up like a lot of weird processes to making the thumbnails and to editing the show and uploading it and sharing it around, that if I were to explain it to someone, it wouldn't make sense. but like you've done it so much over time, you've like created these heuristics you can use. The same with editing videos on YouTube and pretty much anything I do, like the templates I've gotten for programming, like you develop them and change them over time. And you come upon this thing that like really works for your situation, but you couldn't have created it from nothing, right? You couldn't have created it from ground zero. So my takeaway would be invest in the process, do everything that you said, everything that Arthur said is spot on. And now I'm kind of at a point where I couldn't see myself not doing the podcast. So I think you have to get there too, if that's what you want, right? Like you have to get to a point where like without the podcast, it feels like something's missing in a contribution to the podcasting world, even if it's wrongly assumed. You have to feel that way. Otherwise, like, you know, what's going to be the driving force? So without my podcast, I think something would be missing. So that's part of the reason I keep doing it. And then, I've just invested in the process so much. It's a part of who I am and what I do. So that helps.
Cool, man. Well, despite not having an extensive amount of notes written out beforehand, we managed to get almost an hour and 40 minutes out of this conversation, so we didn't do too badly.
Not at all. And I think I mentioned that to you, like we've both recorded so many podcasts, we're probably pretty good at talking and talking about things that are interesting and comprehensive, you know.
Yeah, I still maintain I'm not naturally inclined towards it, but I gotta hand it to you. I have developed your skills quite well, because I was able to talk fairly seamlessly there for a lot of that episode. So yeah, no, that was good. I enjoyed that chat now, I must say.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And it's always nice to have this kind of like reflective practice. Why you do what you do and how you do it, because when people listen to this, it may not be like sexy. It may not be here's how you program an overreach to hit PRs at your next meet, but this is what goes on behind the scenes to provide you with the information that's going to be influencing to your practice and to your coaching and to your training. So
yeah,
I think it's enlightening. I think hopefully people enjoyed it as much as we did.
Yeah. Nice one. Okay, Josh, thanks again for setting up this conversation. It was really fun to be a part of, and all the best for the future, man, with the podcast, with coaching, with lifting. I wish you the very best with it. And so thank you again once more. And I'm sure I'll be hearing from you again pretty soon.
Yep. Thanks, Arthur.